You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Hi all, welcome to Nick Luck Daily. Tom Stanley in for Nick. It's Wednesday the 24th of April. Nick is Hong Kong bound or landed, not certain. He'll be back with you tomorrow. That is ahead of a big weekend racing in Hong Kong. More on that with the croc later, because it's Wednesday, which will also give us our point-to-pointing feature in association with Thoroughbred. Alan Hill joins us to tell us a little bit more about that. We've got lots to get through. I will do so with senior writer at the Racing Post, Lee Mottishead, but we start with the news that the great Olivier Pellier has decided to bow out off the back of a stunning, stellar career, and his longtime agent, Shippy Ellis, is here to tell me a little bit more about what he was like to work with and the great times they've shared together. Shippy, thanks ever so much for your time. Take me back to those early days.
We started together in 1996, and we've been together for 28 years. The first 8 years were without any French agents, so we had to do it all ourselves. Then in 2004, the excellent Hervé Nagar joined us to work as Olivier's French agent, and we've all worked together in partnership ever since. For me, it's been a great honour and privilege to be associated with such a colourful, fun-loving individual, combined with his exceptional skills. A top world-class jockey, certainly been a master of his craft.
Take me back, Shippy. Take me back to 96 then. What was a young Olivier like?
He was very outgoing, very pleasant. And he arranged to meet an estate agent in Le Morlaix. And they stood outside the house, and the estate agent was waiting for his father to come to buy the house, but it was Olivier who was actually buying the house. the estate agent couldn't believe that somebody that young would have that amount of money. But I was present for three of his art wins in the Derby. He won on High Rise. At that particular time, he had a habit of kissing everybody. After he won the Derby, I had to take him to one side and informed him that he was to go and have an audience with Her Majesty the Queen. He said, "Which one? The young one or the old one?" I said, "The younger one." I said, "The other lady is the Queen Mother." I then stressed to him that on no account should he kiss or attempt to kiss Her Majesty. He replied, "Are you sure?" I said, "It is definitely not allowed, Olivier." And the late and great Desmond Stoneham, you may remember, was also a great help to us in the early days.
And has he, the sort of passion for the game which he embodies, I mean, was that, that's never really waned, has it? I guess between all of you as a team, there's a real, you know, a sort of an obvious outgoing love of the game from him, wherever he's riding.
Yes, I mean, he was, you know, it was a serious top-class jockey. I mean, you know, he did everything he possibly could, you know, to win the races for the owners. But along the way, he was also a cheerful individual and always up for a laugh. And we had some laughs over the years. I remember on one occasion he was riding in the big Arab race at Goodwood, and the airstrip was flooded and the plane was unable to return to France. So I instructed him and the other French jockeys to proceed to Portsmouth and take the night ferry to Le Havre. Then later in the evening, I was in the pub, and he said something about a ride. So I went outside the pub for better reception, when he then explained he'd just arrived in Ryde on the Isle of Wight. They'd caught the wrong ferry. So that was rather an amusing episode.
I mean, how does it make you feel, Shippy, that this, you know, that this time of great success and great fun, like all good things, has now come to an end?
Well, I'm obviously sad in a way, but I'm also relieved and you know, the same as Hervé, you know, the French lady. We were both relieved that he's got out in one piece and he's fit and healthy and he can look forward to any other challenges that come along because, you know, he'll certainly find something because he's that kind of character, Tom, you know?
What win, Shippy, gave you the most satisfaction? Which you've talked about Derby and Arx. Is it obviously one of those? Is it something a bit more left field? Which success it gives you the most satisfaction?
Well, I think I asked him that yesterday, and he said, to be honest, he said there were so many. He said big races. He said it's difficult to choose, but obviously the three Arx. Were major achievements, you know, particularly in France. I mean, for a French jockey to win the Arc, it's the ultimate, and to do it four times was something really special. But then Goldie Cover, of course, I think she still holds the record for the most number of Group 1 wins with 14, you know, one horse. Or one filly, anyway. So that was, you know, it was an early success in Japan, and he won the two Japan Cups, and he was revered there in the early days, and he won two German derbies. All those things, you know, they came along one by one, and he took it all in his stride, and he was very good. He was very good with the press, as you know, and the TV and things like that. He was outgoing. He was a good guy.
We'll miss him on the race course, and great memory, Shippy. Thanks ever so much for your time.
You're very welcome, Tom.
Well, a real sense there of what a character Olivier was. I don't know your sort of personal dealings with Mr. Pellier, but The consensus is, off the back of yesterday's news, we'll miss him.
Absolutely, yeah. A career of exceptional achievement and exceptional length as well, Tom. One of those French jockeys, and this hasn't always been the case, French-based jockeys who really not only had enormous success in Britain, but was widely respected in Britain as well. You know, as you go back through the years, there was definitely a period when French jockeys were looked on occasions with a bit of a skepticism from some European, from British owners and trainers. That wasn't the case with Olivier Pellier, who was often a go-to man for British stables in races here and elsewhere. Of course, won the Derby on High Rise for Luca Kamani, had a big Royal Ascot win on Ouija Board for Ed Dunlop. So Goldie Cover is almost certainly the horse he will be most associated with, and had a wonderful relationship with her, and I remember with great fondness trips to the Breeders' Cup and reporting on her victories. They were an incredible union together. But in some ways, I'd say my favourite Olivier Pellier memory, Tom, comes from a day before I was actually reporting. My first visit to the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe in 1997 and seeing Peintre Célèbre produce what in my experience at Longchamp is still the most impressive arc-winning performance I think I've seen in the flesh. And I would argue that Peintre Célèbre is probably the best horse Olivier Pellier ever rode. And again, his longevity in the saddle can be seen at that 1997 arc was Sir Peter O'Sullivan's final arc commentary. Now, he's like Frank Dettori. He goes back that far to the era of O'Sullivan. Wonderful jockey. Great that he's getting out in one piece on his own terms. And I'm sure that his future life, as was his riding life, would be both successful and far from boring.
And you mention the great Frankie Dettori there, a real contemporary of Olivier's, but he's obviously still going, and he's got a mount in the 2024 Kentucky Derby. on Society Man, and I guess that was there was talk last year, Lee, of, you know, would it transpire that off at the back of his time riding California, he'd pick up a Derby mat. He didn't. He came back to the UK, but we know he was staying out there this year, and with the idea and the hope of picking up a Derby ride, and he's landed one.
Yeah, he has, and wasn't quite Last Chance Saloon, but obviously we are on the cusp of the now, and that was, I think, when Frankie went out to the States to ride full time when he put off his retirement and he relocated. He was clear in saying that his greatest ambition was to have a ride in and be competitive in the Kentucky Derby. He has landed a ride on a horse called Society Man, as you say, Tom, trained by Danny Gargan, a horse who isn't one of the leading contenders, but I was watching his most recent effort this morning on Tinternet. He finished second to a horse called Resilience in the Wood Memorial, an established Derby trial at Aqueduct just by JFK Airport. It was a pleasing effort. He was ridden relatively prominently. He lost ground on Resilience in the final furlong, but it was a fit, and the trainer has said all along through this year that he's been looking to get the horse to go out in trip, and he believes that improvement will come as a result of that. If you look in the betting at the moment, you can get between 25 to 1 and 50 to 1 about Resilience. I'm not enough of an expert on the Kentucky Derby horses to tell you whether that is a good price or a bad price, but I suspect lots of punters over here will be having a few quid or euro on Frankie Dettori in the Kentucky Derby and giving him their support when we get to the big day.
It's an interesting story, which Nick flung in my direction. Keir Jorabshan, obviously owner of Amo Racing and one of the football super agents, who was confronted by 12 debt collectors at his office. He was separately relieved of an expensive watch at a restaurant. What do we know? What do we think, Lee?
Yes, Tom. So Keir Jorabshan regularly obviously appears on this podcast, a very high profile racehorse owner now through Amo Racing. We know what King of Steel did last season, second in the Derby, won the Champion Stakes under Frankie Dettori, and Keir has obviously been in the news, in the Racing Post, on this pod for other matters, not in relation to his employment of jockeys and trainers. In the news on this occasion, in rather an unusual way, because his name was referenced in Southwark Crown Court yesterday in relation to a case involving a gentleman called Saif Al-Ruby, who, like Keir Jorabshan, works in and around football, representing footballers. And Mr. Al-Ruby is involved in a case in relation to a lady, Marina Granovskaya, who claims that Mr. Al-Ruby was seeking money from her. She's a former director of football at Chelsea in relation to the transfer of a player, and the nature of that attempt to get money from her is central to this case. Anyway, the gentleman, the prosecutor, Arizona Asante, who, as I say, is prosecuting the case at Southwark Crown Court, referenced an incident involving Keir Jorabshan and saying that it is alleged that Mr. Al-Ruby sent Ms. Granovskaya an email threatening her. This goes back to May 22, 2022, that the money was not paid, that he alleges was his commission, but she might suffer the fate of someone called Keir Jorabshan, who owed him money and did not pay in time. And Mr. Asante in court said he, Mr. Jorabshan, was allegedly accosted in a restaurant, an expensive watch taken from him, and thereafter in his office confronted by about a dozen men all at one time, effectively intimidating him into handing over bundles of cash in intervals until the money that was owed was paid off. That's what was said in court. That's all I know, Tom.
Lee, what do we know latest wise on the proposed gambling regulation bill. David Jennings wrote an article yesterday, which there is an expectation that there will be no change to the proposed betting blackout, which ultimately, I guess, is a concern for punters, a concern for racing.
Yes, yeah, certainly a huge concern for racing. This gambling regulation bill has another big day in its legislative journey today, Tom. It goes before the Irish government at a time when Flutter, the gambling operator, has released details of a survey that it claims shows that the gambling regulation bill will cost the Exchequer money and will result in punters moving towards the black market. Key within the gambling bill and its concern for Irish racing is section 141 of the bill, which would introduce a blanket ban on betting advertising from 5:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. And for Irish racing, a particular concern here is what that would do to coverage or broadcasting of racing on Racing TV and Sky Sports Racing into Ireland and into Irish homes at that time, because the management of both companies, and remember, Racing TV is the channel that broadcasts Irish horse racing, the management of both those companies have said it would not be financially viable for them to continue broadcasting into Ireland in a world in which that betting advertising ban from 5:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. existed. Suzanne Ead, the chief executive of Horse Racing Ireland, spoke to the Racing Post yesterday and said she did not believe that there would be any amendments to that controversial section of the bill during today's later stage of the legislative journey. She talked about how there had been progress on other fronts and how she believed that the minister and his officials are listening to what Horse Racing Ireland is saying. And also, Suzanne Ead reinforced a previous comment that she has made, whereby she said racing will remain on Irish television screens regardless of what happens. She hasn't said how that would happen, but she said again yesterday, yes, absolutely, we just wouldn't let that happen, i.e. we wouldn't let horse racing disappear they wouldn't allow the coverage of Irish racing to cease to be available in Ireland, because that is the ultimate irony at the minute, Tommy. If Racing TV in particular went through with its threat, you would have a situation whereby viewers in Godalming, Carlisle and Kirkcaldy could watch racing from Clonmel and Tramore on any given day, but the viewers in Clonmel and Tramore and across Ireland would not see that same coverage. There has to be a likelihood that whatever happens, as Suzanne said, a way around this would be found, but it might be a costly way around it. And the situation at the moment is clearly of serious concern to a number of different parties.
Well, another classic trial on the agenda this weekend, and Owen Burrows joins me, who has war rooms in that Bet365 classic trial. Starting point, Owen, thanks for your time. How is war rooms?
Yeah, look, I've been very pleased with his work this spring. Obviously he lacks a little bit of experience, but he's got some nice entries. So we felt, you know, we wanted to see where we were, and thought Sandown would suit him. And we'll give it a shot.
I mean, the last race at Donny, he looked as though he wanted further than the seven. Is that fair?
Yes, definitely. Look, I always felt he was going to be a horse who probably wanted a mile, but he won well, admittedly only in a novice on soft ground at Doncaster. And my initial thoughts were to go to the listed race at Haydock, but the ground was quite fast there that day. We took a punt back at Doncaster, but look, it's probably my fault. I'd left him without a run. He'd probably fallen asleep a little bit and forgotten what he'd learned in his first run. And then, just, you know, a whole different tempo of a listed race. He just found things happening a bit quick. But what pleased me was that, you know, in that last furlong, once he got himself organised, he hit the line strong. And he's crying out for this sort of trip, I think.
So this is obviously 10. I mean, do you see him as a mile and a half horse in time, or will you find out more on Friday?
Yeah, I think we'll find out. You know, he's not a slow horse. He does have speed, you know. Obviously he's in the Derby and the Irish Derby, but he obviously is in the French Derby as well. So, we'll find out a lot more on Friday.
While we're in the mile and a half bracket, Dear Emil obviously won on his reappearance. How's he?
Yeah, look, he's come out of it fine. You know, that was the plan, to just try and find a nice, easy race for him to get his head in front. And, you know, look, people can look at it, and obviously he got beat at 5-1 on last year, where he looked a bit quirky. But, you know, he's shown no signs of that with me at home. I just think he's still mentally very immature. So, and that's what Jim said at Windsor there Monday, that he just took a little bit of time to, you know, understand what was being asked of him. But then once he grasped it inside that last furlong, he really hit the line strong, sort of a mile and a half will suit him, and probably further, you know.
Where are you likely to run him next?
Well, I think Ahmed said that, yeah, we're going to go straight to the Derby, I think. So
I thought he might do that. Very good, very good.
Yeah. Look, you can't argue with him. He's been placed before at big odds. So it's always a dream of his. So we'll give it a shot.
And Alianabi, who obviously has got some of the best form out there with that second to City of Troy, how's he come into the three-year-old season?
Yeah, look, again, we've been pleased with him. Took him to Newmarket there last week. He had a gallop Craven week. And I think that's done the job. Sort of, I just felt he's been a bit sharper now in his bits of work since then. Jim's actually ridden him this morning. I haven't caught up with Jim yet because I'm up at Doncaster Sales. But speaking to my guys at home, that he was very pleased with him.
Okay, so next port of the call, the Guineas. Just beyond that, how do you what do you see him as this season? Is he an out and out miler?
Well, if you asked me that last year, I'd have probably said yes. But I'll be honest, he's relaxing a bit better now. He might just get a little bit further. So again, we thought this is as good a starting spot for him. And I'll be honest, we might just look to go a little bit further, but we'll see what happens a week Saturday.
Thanks for your time. Best of luck.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Well, Owen Burrows there talking about his charge in the Bet365 Classic Trial. Obviously, the action on Saturday, Lee, at Sandown is going to take centre stage because it's the close of the jump season, but it's always a decent card. On Friday, the flat card, what are the potential stories emerging this weekend? What are you looking forward to?
Some good horses running on Friday, Tom. I'm particularly looking forward to see the return of Desert Hero, the King of Queens horse, who ran a fine race and finished third in the St. Ledger, having won at Royal Ascot and the Gordon Stakes. There was talk of him going for the Melbourne Cup. That's last year, that didn't happen. He will return on Friday at Sandown in the Marnock Quarter Gordon Richard Stakes, the Hardwick Stakes. Clearly the aim for him, the task of those training horses for the King and Queen is primarily to get those horses, if possible, to Royal Ascot, where the King and Queen days last year. The hard would be the plan for Desert Hero. He runs in that race at Nostrum, who at times has looked like a potential superstar, but at other times has very much not. He makes his reappearance for Sir Michael Statt, whose season hasn't yet really got going in the Bet365 Mile. Lord North goes against him in that. And we've got 9 in the Classic Trial at 3:35 tomorrow. The most interesting of those would appear to be Arabian Crown, who's around 12-1 for the Derby after an easy win in the Zetland Stakes on his final outing last season. He returns for William Buick, Charlie Appleby and Godolphin, and a 9-runner running of the Classic Trial. And then, of course, we're all back at Sandown on Saturday, Tom, for the final day of the jump season.
William Mullins, well represented. Proper animals on Saturday.
Well, do you know, and that, for me, aside from the fact that we will have the final knockings of this trainers championship, which is going to be won, isn't it, by Willie Mullins. He's well represented again today, Ludlow, and more so at Perth. Hard to see really how anyone, well, anyone, Dan Skelton or Paul Nicholls, can stop Willie Mullins now winning this. It would be a momentous achievement. But parallel to this trainer's title battle, and obviously because of this trainer's title battle, we are going to see horses at Sandown on Saturday that we would not normally have expected to see. Anthony Bromley was on the pod yesterday talking about El Fabiolo and Ampere Pass, and those are two horses that in perhaps in other circumstances we would have expected them to be going to Punchestown next week, and maybe they still will. Who knows? Easy wins could mean a few doubles are attempted between Sandown and Punchestown. But that clash between El Fabiolo and John Bonn, that we have been waiting to see all season and haven't seen it. John Bonn didn't run in the champion chase. El Fabiolo did, but he didn't get further than the fifth fence. It will be great to witness that. There will be other high quality horses running on the card that, say, in normal circumstances, we might not have had. The Bet365 Gold Cup looks deep and full of interest. So, yeah, it looks an absolute humdinger of a finale day with some good flat racing to whet the appetite first on Friday.
Well, Peter Maloney joins me now to talk about a very special sale which is coming up at Punchestown. It's during the point-to-point sale, Gough's point-to-point sale, where there'll be lots of money down for the horses. But Peter, we all hope there's going to be lots of money down for a very special set of colours. All the money raised will go to the new equine centre named in memory of the late Jack de Bromhead. And the hope is, Peter, the realistic hope, that hopefully these colours will make a good bit of money. Why are the colours so special?
So this set of colours for Zoe Smalley, Henry de Bromhead's travelling head girl, when Honey won her first Grade One in Fairy House. So Zoe was a bit superstitious, so she actually put these colours away and only brought them out when Rachel was riding Honeysuckle. So basically, these are the colours that Rachel wore in all of Honeysuckle's Grade One races, including two champion hurdles and her Hatton's Graces and her Irish champion hurdles and her Punchestown champion hurdles. And so this is the set. This set. It just came to light when Zoe did a video for the Jockey Club pre Cheltenham, and she was packing up the stuff for Cheltenham, and she next minute she on screen she pulls out these colours that no one else knew existed. So
did you know?
Nabbed them fairly quickly.
Did you know that they were the same colours every time?
No, not at all. We only knew when we saw this video. So it was quite remarkable. So we said we better nab them for something special.
And having been at Punchestown when Honeysuckle has won there, you know, we all know just how much she meant to that crowd, to everyone that is associated with racing at Punchestown. So, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people who want to see the sale, let alone get their hands on the colours.
I hope so. I mean, this is for a very special cause. So it's, as you said, for the new Equine Centre in Dublin, and which is in the facility of Child Vision, which is basically therapy, equine therapy for children with visual impairment. And this new centre is just being built. €1 million has been raised already. A huge thanks has to go to Sean, to Chris Jones, and his friends, who did a wonderful job raising money for it. And obviously the centre was going to need ongoing funds, and so when we came up with the idea of auctioning the colours for a charity, we asked Heather and Henry, you know, to choose a charity, and of course they chose this charity straight away. So we're really hoping that this is going to make an obscene amount of money. And as I say, they're a very, very special set of colours. So for a very, very special cause. So they're going to be sold in the ring by the sales company and by the same auctioneer that sold us Honeysuckle herself, whatever, 6 years ago. So I think it's all quite fitting, and hopefully it'll all come together.
It's all come full circle, and as you say, all for the most important of causes as well. Peter, thanks ever so much for your time, and yeah, I hope you raise the sort of money you're after.
No problem. Thanks very much, Tom.
All right, let's talk point to pointing. Let's talk Thoroughbid. The next sale, Thoroughbid sale, is on the 30th of April. Entries have closed. There's some pretty interesting ones entered, and I'm sure there'll be some gems found when the sale goes live. That is next Tuesday. Also, a reminder about the point to rules bonus on offer. That is the Thoroughbid point to rules bonus, offering £5,000 to any graduate of a British, English, Scottish and Welsh point to point that has not previously won under rules. If you want to win that bonus, a horse must win their first start post sale in either a National Hunt flat race, which a UK point to point National Hunt flat race is not eligible. So a National Hunt flat race, or a hurdle race, or a steeplechase under rules in the UK or Ireland. In effect, if you buy a horse from the pointing field in Britain next Tuesday and it wins on debut, you'll get a good chunk of your outlay back. Bang! There we go. We should talk about the Trainers' Championship, but not the one you're all thinking. Talking about the point-to-point Trainers' Championship, because Alan Hill, who joins me now, is level and likely, or where would you make yourself favourite or not, Alan?
Good morning. I don't know about the betting on it.
I'm not sure there is, but go on.
No, I'm sure Mark Hill will give you a prize. He's a good point-to-point supporter with always pricing up anything regards championships. But no, we've got Max Comley, Josh Newman and myself all on 18 at the moment. And Charlie and Fran posted a bat behind us on 12, but they've got a lot of firepower left as well. I don't think I would be favourite, but I would hope I would have a fair chance and will obviously have an eye on it to try and do my best.
Now, so the interesting thing here is that stable jockey Izzy Marshall is trying to chase down Gina for the title, for the jockey's title as well. So now I don't know if that sort of helps or hinders your chances, if you like, but I guess the thing is you're going to team up together with as many live chances as possible. But are you more sort of putting horses out there for her to win it over you?
Yeah, I think what you say is correct. We are definitely concentrating on Izzy. It's a great chance for her. We know that Gina has had other priorities during the season with a fantastic run and ride in the Grand National. Took up a lot of her time and energy. So that just left the door a little bit open, and Izzy was able to keep plugging away and has got a two-win lead. I wouldn't compare myself in any way the talent of Paul Nichols, but I'd very much agree with what he said. He is more thinking on Harry Cobden and wanting to support Harry, and I would be the same with Izzy. Yes, horses have been entered everywhere in varying races to give her the best chances in her riding winners. It's obviously got to help me, but she is at the moment our main concentration here.
Just sort of sum up the season as a whole. Obviously, the fact that you and Izzy are in line for a trainer and jockey championship tells you it's been pretty good. But how's it felt at home this year?
How's it felt at home? Very busy, very challenging. And I should think every point-to-point keeper and every trainer under rules will probably say the same in that. The weather has been challenging. We have actually, since the beginning of the season, only missed one weekend of having a runner and going somewhere in the country to run horses. We've had to go far and wide, and we even went east the other day to High Easter, where they had actually put a small amount of water on when there were meetings that weekend in the west side of the country off. So it's been a challenge for everyone, but having said that, the yard has had the horses in good health. They've run a lot better this year. We just last year were underperforming a little bit. We did a lot of work through the summer to check out, cleanse out, and make sure that we got everything back in order. And in doing that this year, we have felt the horses have performed a lot better. And with that, we're all the same. Winners makes the work a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't it just? In the document that the Thoroughbid team puts together, They've referred you as the elder statesman in the training ranks. So you happy with that? I mean, I suppose it's accurate, Alan, isn't it? But they mean it in the nicest possible term.
I was always told it's better to be talked about than not talked about. And elder statesman, I don't feel it, but I suppose age you could never lie about. So I am probably, I'm a lot more senior than both Josh and Max and one or two of the others that are snapping away.
And no doubt wiser. And that leads me to ask you how you feel the health of the sport is. Obviously, you've seen a lot of developments and changes over a number of years. Where would you put it in 2024 health-wise? And weather aside, because I know it's been challenging.
Health-wise, very, very competitive, but that is because of the loss of meetings and people wanting to run their horses. And at the moment, there's no easy place to go and nick a race. There are a lot of horses still wanting to run, so you rock up and you have got a competitive race. So I think the paying public, the spectator, the punter is getting tremendous value out of their entry fee to go into a point-to-point. I went to Fakenham on Sunday. Absolutely, the Open was as good as any hunter chase we've had this season by the two fox hunters. I went to Parham on Saturday. Seriously good racing throughout the whole day. At this time of year, you just start to think things slow up a bit. Unfortunately, you know, the old horse can't run because of ground or may have picked up a bit of an injury or whatever, but these horses seem fresh, they're competitive, and I think this drier spell that we've been having, a bit drier the last month, is let the people that haven't got the full facilities of an all-weather gallop at home get onto the grass, get a bit more work into their horses, school more, and those horses now are a bit fresher and they're coming and taking us on as well. So I feel this season the racing itself is in fantastic order, very good. The sport itself, we are down in horses numbers, there's no hiding that, and we are down a few meetings this year through weather and one or two hunts. Obviously, it's a financial risk and a lot of input to run a meeting have not sort of taken on this year of wanting to take that risk. So that's a little bit of a downer side on it. But people that are involved in it at the moment are as competitive as ever. And I feel that it is holding its own, even if we are a little bit down in numbers.
Alan, great stuff. Thank you. The next Thoroughbred sale is next Tuesday. That's when it goes live, the 30th of April. Have you had success buying a horse from a Thoroughbred sale, Alan?
Yeah, back at Christmas time, Joe always likes to click in and have a look what's happening and see what's on there. And he bid on one out of Gordon Elliott's. He rang me up that morning. He was away galloping on the way back. He said, look, I've seen this one. I want to have a bid on it. And he bought it out of Gordon Elliott's yard. I must admit, I was a little bit anxious, thinking, how can we improve that? But we have had two or three off of Gordon before. And for point-to-pointing, they've done us very well. Horses like Cooler Park and Bat Bar have come from Gordon. And anyway, so we got this horse back and got him going and decided on Easter Monday to take him to Paxford, a 2.5 mile open, right-handed. Gordon did say that he is a horse that favours that. And he went and won by 15 lengths. So over the moon, a new owner to the yard who Joe got the horse sold to. So what better start could we have? And he hopefully will run over the next bank holiday weekend. So very exciting.
Great stuff. Well, there you are. Make sure you log in again on Tuesday, the 30th of April, for the next Thoroughbred sale. And you can take advantage as well of the £5,000 point to rules bonus. Alan, thanks ever so much.
Good to speak. Thanks very much.
All right, let's get to Hong Kong. Here's the crop.
Nick, being in situ yourself, I know you appreciate that this week is pretty special in the Hong Kong calendar. FWD Champions Day at Sha Tin on Sunday. It looks like being one of those champions meetings that actually lives up to its billing. The Razzmatazz is a notch lower than the Hong Kong International Races in December, but it is a mega important fixture this. Golden 60 is back after an injury setback. Romantic Warrior trying to win a third QE2 Cup. And California Spangle looking to take the mantle from the sidelined Lucky Swainess in the sprinting division. Three of the top-rated horses in the world at present, and that is special. I know you will be spotlighting the three British hopes and their respective connections this week. Dubai Honor, Brave Emperor, and Believing. The rain this week will certainly help Dubai Honor, you'd think, but they will have their work cut out against this lineup of local stars. Tonight at Happy Valley, there are nine races, and Tony Cruz limbers up for his California Spangle Challenge on Sunday with a horse called Whiz Kid. Whiz Kid in race five tonight. Whiz Kid, number one, comes up against number four, Seasons Wit, who's a pretty good sprinter over this 1,000-metre trip. It is a specialist trip at the Valley, a real scamper to the first turn, but Whiz Kid is a specialist at the Valley over this course and I think can come back to winning form. So race five, number one, Whiz Kid, to beat number four, Seasons Wit. My best on the day is in race seven, number seven, Glory Cloud, who's a charm spirit gelding, a four-year-old, who's naught from four in Hong Kong, but his last couple of runs have been very good, particularly his last run when he rattled home for third, beaten only 2.5 lengths, and he's being saddled up by Casper Founds, the four times champion, who had a treble at Sha Tin on Sunday. So Glory Cloud, race seven, number seven, to beat number six, Sight Supreme, who makes his debut, his racecourse debut for John Size and Zach Purton. That's all on the Hong Kong beat this week. I'll have more for you next week.
Back with Lee Motter to the Racing Post. Just a tip, please, Lee.
Just a tip, I am going to take you, Tom. I mentioned that Willie Mullins is set to have a number of runners at Ludlow and Perth today. I'm going to go to Perth for the first day of their big three-day festival. Lots of good horses running over the 3 days. And one that particularly interests me today is Apple Away, trained by Lucinda Russell, ridden by Derek Fox, a mare who probably hasn't hit the heights this season that Connections would have expected, but she's still run some really good races, and she goes in the 3:25. It's a listed chase for mares over 3 miles. Willie Mullins is represented by Instinct. Gordon Elliott has a runner, Riviere Detel, Gavin Cromwell has a runner, Malina Girl. So it's two Brits against three Irish trained horses, but I think one of those Brits, Apple Away, will win for local trainer Lucinda Russell in the 3:25 at Perth.
Lee, thanks very much indeed. Thanks to everyone that's tuned in today. Don't miss us again tomorrow, when Nick will be back with you. That was Wednesday, the 24th of April. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the racing app in partnership with FitStairs.